The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
We're going to get straight into it as we are here joined by with Garth Voze, a man slash boy social advocate. Yeah, he's an advocate and a life coach for men and boys. So help me welcome him to the Overdrive. Welcome, Garth. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Carrie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm well.
Nice. You see that t-shirt? I love that t-shirt. I love it. The Dear Men Project.
Yes, ma'am.
Is that an actual project? What is that? Tell me quickly about that. I'm interested.
Well, first of all, it started, you don't even know if it's a project or not, because we've been in Trinidad for the longest time pushing awareness for men and boys. And I've been on Freedom before with some conversations about men's health and like International Men's Day coming up.
Right.
So it is a real project.
Nice to know and nice to understand. But this is the first time I've had any discussions and conversation with you. So I can't wait. I'm excited.
Me too.
Now, I know today we are going to be discussing prison overload. And for our listeners who don't really understand what that means, from your perspective as a men's and boys' social advocate, what does prison overload in Trinidad and Tobago like really look like from the ground? What does it really look like?
Well, you know, if you think about it from just the fact of prison overload, when we think prison overload, what's the first thing that comes to you in terms of gender? Are we thinking women or men?
Well, I'm thinking about, when I hear about prison, I think it's men. That's the first thought.
Exactly. So that's where our first issue is. So one of the things that we discussed and we continue to discuss, and I even posted recently, was about the fact that our young men and men are not showing up to workshops, but they shouldn't have been in jail or the newspaper. So when we say that's an overload, which means that you have a lot of people that are going in for the first time and then reoffending and coming right back in. So there's a gap between the rehabilitation of our young men in terms of when they come out, so that they do really go back into there.
Right.
Also, we have to think about what are the programs that we have in our communities that keep them out of jail.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know, so that's where most of this conversation started. I think we really have to look at it from the perspective of just the statistics in Trinidad and Tobago with crime and everything else, and the fact that your prison population, when you think about it, when 99% of people think about prison, they don't think about a woman's prison, they think about men.
Yeah,
which again, I've said this to people, that means that the solution is also inside of the problem.
Nice. I gotcha. Now, before we continue, I know there are a lot of persons just joined us. And let me just tell you, we are having a discussion, an interview with Garth Voze, a men slash boy social advocate. And he's a life coach. And we are discussing prison overload. And he's a seasoned professional with over a decade of experience in the health and wellness industry. He's even a personal trainer and a coach, entrepreneur, and author of The Journey Continues, Evolve, a series of self-help motivational books, as the founder of the Dare Men Project and the Caribbean Men and Boys Social Advocate. Garth aims to strengthen the connection between Caribbean men and their communities with a focus on their overall health and wellness, both mental and physical. So, you are the guy who's fit for this conversation that we're having here. Now, what factors do you think contribute most to our prisons being filled beyond capacity?
Well, let's narrow it down. What factors affect the prisons for men overpopulated? Because if you look around now, especially in today's society, and it's something we compare a lot, because we look at it from a debatable type of project. Are there more resources for men now in today's young men or young women? It is an overwhelmingly bigger or imbalance when it comes to girls and young women's projects or programs versus young men. So what we're saying is that if it is that we have less for them as young men, what opportunities are we affording them? And then what do we expect? If it is we don't have resources that they could utilize or even that they know about, how can we expect anything else from them except going right back into the communities that are normally plagued with violence and crime? So the expectation is somewhat I would say not impossible, but the expectation is somewhat unlikely, because you're literally telling them to figure it out by not giving them the resources that they need, or even getting them have access to it.
Yeah.
And then we want to know why does they end up right back in jail.
Mm.
So that's where the conversation is. Like, we don't think about prisons when we think about prison and say only men and women. We just think about men. You and I both.
Yeah.
So the fact that we have that issue, that's where we should really look and see, well, what is the alternative to the young man in today's world when it comes to, do I choose X or do I choose Y?
Right.
Especially now, we realize most of them are choosing X.
Yeah, of course. And I just want to add to something. I remember I was having a conversation with a neighbor of mine, and he was mentioned, well, he came out of jail, right? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, like about a week or so after, we heard that he went back into jail. And I was like, but how come? But then he came back out eventually. And I was like, yo, what's going on with you?
Yeah.
He mentioned that it's easier to live inside the prison's wall, behind the prison's wall, than outside. And when he said that, I was like, you know, it probably might make sense.
Well, it's a valid point, because when you look at the rehabilitation of prisoners that come out there, young men that come out there, let's just say young men, I'm not saying prisoners, let's say young men.
Young men.
Mm-hmm. When you look at rehabilitation of young men that come out of there, they just go right back to where they came from. You know, so if it is easier, because remember, if you've been in there for a while and you come out, you know, we have this idea of holding people for years before we can find if they're guilty or not, and I'll just say it. And then when they come out, they have to go stay by a friend's house or go by see some relative who hasn't seen them in a while. Then you have to try to find a job.
Yeah.
So you're looking at what is the other, again, that's what we said earlier. What is the expectation and what's the alternative?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes if you know the meal comes from there and these other things come from there, but when you're outside, you're either being scrutinized by your community
mm-hmm.
or you have to go right back into the same thing that would get you right back into jail.
Yeah.
What is our expectation as a country? Mm-hmm. Not just as, you know, okay, for young men, but as a country, what are we expecting from them if we're giving them option B and saying that that's the
only option it have? So it comes whereby, you know, they don't have a choice. Yeah, I had to go back to B.
Well, yeah, they have a choice, but if you think about it, the choices are very, very difficult to make
mm-hmm.
because it's what's comfortable.
Correct.
Right? So I always tell people that there are people who are following programs who they decided that's the choice they want to do, but if you think about the young mind that's very impressionable,
mm-hmm.
it's a choice, yes, but which choice would somebody who is more impressionable choose?
Yeah.
To do it where it's faster, or to do it and say, let's just think long term? You have the percentage that does that, but the major percentage or the majority would choose what's familiar and what's comfortable.
Mm, yes. Now, you mentioned we are talking about young men. How has the prison population changed over the years, or are we even seeing any worrying trends? Because we mentioned young men. I mm-hmm. don't really know an old prisoner, you know, like, honestly.
Well, you know, Carrie, that is such a good point and such a timely point. Because what I was going to tell you is that when you look at the ages that people are incarcerated in Curitiba and Tobago, when you mm-hmm. look at the studies that they've done, because they've done studies, the African Journal of Criminology and Justice has done studies in Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah.
And the average age is now from, it used to be 13, now it's from like 10 to be incarcerated.
Wow.
To, let's say, 38 to 40.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at that age group, that's where they should be working, right? That's where they should be contributing to the country, right?
Well, yeah.
Well, that's the age. So when you say you haven't really seen an older person go in there, think about it from this aspect. If they're older and they come out, then there are different things that they may be able to have, resources that they may not have had before when they were younger. Like, you have to get a job.
Right, definitely.
So the ages that they get incarcerated are the same ages that they would have been in society, getting a job, doing some studies, you know, doing this. Like, so that time, that's the age. So now that it went from maybe 13 or 14 to 10, you're going into places like YTRC, where when they come out of YTRC, are they any better than when they went back in?
Correct.
And then what's the next step after YTRC?
Mm.
Regular prison.
Wow. But do you think that we are doing enough to assist these young men to actually rehabilitate? Like, honestly, do you think that we are doing enough?
Carrie, I want you to ask yourself that question.
Well, I
like,
don't
literally
know,
say, like, no, say it. If we have an issue in that area, which mm-hmm. means we're not doing enough. We've changed the YTC, which you really don't hear anything about, since 2018.
Mm-hmm.
2018, the paper published that they changed the name from YTC to YTRC for rehabilitation.
Right. Yeah.
But you don't hear anything about that. You don't hear about programs that are on the news that says, hey, listen, we did this great thing. These people have graduated from the YTRC program. You don't see that. But you're seeing men showing up in that space a lot, because if we don't even know about the programs, and we don't even know that since 2018 was the last time they changed the name, but it was the last media coverage they had,
right,
which means that something is not working, as well as we're implementing programs, and this has nothing to do with politics, it's just with people.
Right.
We're implementing programs from way back when, the same thing we had now. So which means that the issue is there because there's no rehabilitation program that works. And in a live I did last week, somebody mentioned to me on the live, they said the reason why the young men are not taking the programs is because the program doesn't appeal to them, which right. I said 110% you're correct.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't appeal to them. Now, if the solution is inside of the problem, then if we look at the program and say the program is not appealing to them, that is the solution as well. Then let's find programs that appeal to the young men so that they're more attracted and they would more or less stay the duration of the course of the program than just drop out halfway.
Okay. Now, we've been having discussions right here on the station about the whole issue by, you know, when these youths, they get in jail there, they get into prison, they get incarcerated, and they come back out and then they go in, right? But something I don't understand, you have to forgive me, because I honestly don't know and I'm not aware. How can they... You mentioned that, I'm trying to get my words together. You mentioned that they have to put programs in place that would appeal to the younger, but to the gentleman, the youth, right?
Mm-hmm.
How can that be done when most of the times it's something that they want quickly? They want fast money. They want the money now. They don't want to work actually to get where they need to be.
Right.
How are they going to do that? So, but that is the mentality or the attitude towards the programs being offered.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, and again, you're hitting it on the nail on the head, Carrie. The idea of appealing to the young men who think fast is better. And that's a mentality, right? That's a mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we have to go back earlier, and maybe before, instead of just being reactive to everything, maybe we be proactive with the younger men that are now growing up in the schools and kind of showing them a direction, creating programs from that perspective so they learn better.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Two, the ones that are already in there, if we make stuff where the programs are more of a merit, and I'm just throwing stuff out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because this is what leads to my other point. If we make it in a way where these programs benefit them in some way, where they don't have to see it as, okay, it has to be long-term, but something that could maybe consistently be done so that they keeps up with it, that's also a good point.
Mm-hmm.
And the other point is something that most people don't really want to talk about, but I am normally one of those people who would talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot continue to have the people making these programs be the people who don't understand the kids at all.
Exactly.
Right? You cannot continue to say, I want to make a program that appeals to this age group or this person, and you don't even have an idea how to use a cell phone. Let's not just beat around the bush and go like, oh yeah,
because
these programs are being put into place. So there was a program that, and do you know the name Gordon Husbands?
No, I'm not aware of that name.
Okay, so Gordon Husbands was a pivotal part of the prison system where he wanted to educate inmates in terms of rehabilitate them so that when they come out, there's some type of substance that they're coming out with.
Mm-hmm.
So Gordon Husbands, his last TEDx talk was maybe 12 years ago. And I don't think I don't know what really happened. I can't really tell you what this prison system has or has not.
Mm-hmm.
However, we can see it by the numbers that we have out there now in terms of population being more increased. And when they come out, they go right back in.
Right.
So those three things I would say. I would say instead of always being reactive, let's be proactive and let's get those programs into the schools early so the young men could see that there's hope. That's one.
Right.
Two, we have to continue to look at it in a way where the programs that appeal to them made them feel as something that can consistently maintain them when they come out of there, which is true rehabilitation, because you enter into society. If you've been there 5 years, that means 5 years has changed. Things have been different, right? Now, the last part is that you have to bring people to the table who are on the ground, people who understand that things have changed, and people who understand that the kids that you're dealing with now, they were born using an iPad.
Ah, right. And that is what I was coming to. Because to my knowledge, and I could be wrong, and I would love for anyone to correct me, because I don't know what happens in the prison system, right? To me, and this is what I see as a regular person on the outside, I see it as they only have traditional programs, such as, let's say, plumbing, electrical. And to me, and this is just me, I don't think that these youths and them really want to do that, you know. So if it is, I'm not into plumbing and electrical and me, what do you call it? Masonry and carpentry. If carpentry. I'm not into that, I'm not going there.
That's the point, and that comes right back into where reprogramming comes from, because the ideas that are coming to you, are they being ideas that are coming from the younger people,
yeah,
or are they ideas from the older people who still think we're in 1995? And I say it openly because this is something that I say on my social media all the time. I'm trying to understand how we expect to do the same thing in 2025 that we've been doing years that we obviously see does not work.
Yeah.
And then secondly, who's giving you the insight of what program to create?
Yeah.
Right? And if you look at a lot of meetings that you see now on social media and you see these little posts of people in these meetings, just these general meetings,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them are not be able to understand the society that we live in right now, the generation, right?
And
it comes right back into the stuff I do with men. It comes like back in the day, men used to grunt and not talk to their kids. They would talk to the wife and she would talk to the kids. Now men are a little bit more open to have conversation.
Yeah.
So are we utilizing the source that we have in the country and saying, let's bring some of these people who are on the ground to have to find more solutions? Because you and I both don't know everything. We don't.
Correct.
However, if you and I sat down for an hour and we said, let's bounce some ideas off of it, I guarantee you that you may come up with something that you may not have thought about, and I may come up with something that I didn't think about because I was, oh my God, you know, Carrie, that's such a great thing. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
So these conversations that we have in cannot just be, let's have this conversation today. And then next 4 months, we start by talking about, prison population. It's a consistent program, consistent conversation, but also consistent action and effort,
yes,
which we don't have.
And that's what's missing. So let me just tell you guys again, if you've just joined us, we are here with Gad Voze. He's a social advocate and a life coach for men and boys, and we are discussing the prison overload. Now, all that you just mentioned there, Gad, you see, I'm a solution-oriented person. I like to hear solutions, right? So let's say, for instance, the programs for the generation that's incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
What solutions can the government or even NGOs can put into place to kind of reduce or eliminate that non-willingness in participation? Can I say that? What solutions do you think that they could put into place?
I think one, let's have some patience with it, because patience. It's going to take not just conversation, but it's going to take a little bit of commitment. So we have to have patience.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be able to have the conversation in different groups and we meet up and have those conversations. Do a little bit of studies. Do some studies on, hey, what's the feedback from this age group that came out of prison? One of the things that they did in the study that they did in 2023 mm-hmm. was they actually got feedback from some of the prisoners coming out with some of the programs. Some of them said that they enjoyed the program. Some of them said they didn't. But you have to understand that now we're in a time where things are changing so quickly.
Mm.
And a lot of people may say, well, you know, we can't implement a program for 6 months and it will work. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think we have a lack of commitment. Something we try, it doesn't work, we walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then we jump on the bandwagon of what's next. So we jump on, okay, this is kind of cool. Let's do this. Let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
But without investing time and resources into the communities and into programs, into the communities,
mm-hmm.
because the kids are not coming from the jail and then going into the community. They're coming from the community and going into the jail.
Correct.
So we need to find things initially to be a bit more to be proactive instead of being reactive all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you, if you talk to certain people, you could understand what appeals to them and what doesn't. It's just that we're not taking time to do that because we are focused on other things.
Yeah. So I love that. I love that idea. I love that solution. And maybe a suggestion as well. Mm-hmm. What about having conversations with these guys? So like a Monday evening, everybody in the hallway or something, everybody sit down. So, and ask them, hey, how can we help you be a better individual? What do you think that we can do? What programs would you like to get yourself into? Whether it's AI, computer, whatever it is. What about having that conversation, like reaching out to them? But is that happening?
I hardly ever do this, and I will do it To let you know about a program that there is that's currently happening.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it's Empower TT. And I've been a part of that. A couple other people.
I think I saw that already. Yeah. I've seen it.
So we've done some stuff there where they've had those conversations. They have like M zones where they meet up and they talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I applaud the effort that they do. I just know that there's some things that they can do extra.
Right.
Because you have to look at it like a lot of those programs, they rely on governments and they rely on different things for it to happen.
Mm.
So which means that if they don't get a resource, they could only give the resources that they have. That's one.
Correct.
Right. Secondly, if I sit and I talk to a group of 10 boys or 10 young men or even 10 men and say, hey, listen, this is something I want to know. Tell me, you know, like, let me know what works, what doesn't work. Let me know from your perspective, because all we're looking at is perspectives. We don't need opinions. Right. Everybody has opinions, but we want a perspective. What's your perspective? And they say, hey, God, listen, this is what I see. This is what I know might help in terms of some areas. Some of my friends, they prefer to do this and to do that. And I take the same information, Carrie, and I go to somebody that is a decision maker. And that decision maker's mindset still lives in 1805.
Wow.
You know what I'm doing there? I'm disappointing these young men and men and telling them that I believe in what they're saying and what they're saying could be true. So the gap is now between the decision maker and the solution.
And that is the challenge that we are facing.
That's the challenge we're having. Because now when you go to the decision maker, like you say, okay, you do projects and you do workshops and you do these type of things. And they say, well, hey, we have no funding for that. No, we'll do that in October.
Mm-hmm.
It now affects the fact that now the same men that we spoke to, the same 10 men or 10 young men, guess what? They're not opening up to me anymore.
Yeah, because they think that you just like them. Yeah, you just like them. You're not here to help us. Wow.
So again,
that's what
sometimes you have to skip these middle people and you have to go to the decision makers. But if the decision makers are not open-minded enough, none of the programs will work.
Wow. So how are we fixing that? How are we to them? Do you think that we can get to them?
I think we could. Nothing is impossible, and change is something that happens over time. So like I said, we have to have patience with it.
And commitment.
However, we have to have conversations on a regular basis. I'll tell you why. When it comes to, and I don't want to shift it too much, but when it comes to young women and women, we hear what the young women are saying.
Mm-hmm.
We hear empower her. We hear set her up for success because their voice is louder.
Right.
On the men's side,
it is
hear much.
Yeah. So you're absolutely correct.
So if we're not hearing much on this side because we're not having the conversations, like this conversation that you and I are having right now, Carrie, this conversation will be happening a little bit more regularly, because then somebody who's a decision maker may sit back and say, you know what, let me reach out to Carrie and talk to her. I like her idea, or I like God's idea, or I like somebody else who's on the ground and I heard them talking about it.
Yeah.
Whereas when we don't have the conversation, remember, that's a voice that you're not hearing.
Correct.
Right? So if you see something happen and you say, okay, cool, let's bring this to somebody's attention. If we bring it to their attention today, and you know how Trinidad and Tobago is, if we're not in their face,
it will never happen. Correct. I gotcha. Now, Garth, we have news coming up to the top. That's at 4 p.m. I have a lot of questions to ask you, and my lines are ringing. I want to know if you're open to taking a phone call in the meantime.
Would you love to?
Yeah. So let's take that phone call, 625-2257 or 627-3223. Yellow, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Carrie B.
Hey, buddy, what's happening? Talk to us.
I listened to the conversation you all having. And while I commend your guests' efforts to rehabilitate criminals, I myself interacted with a few criminals myself through employment. And I'll tell you one thing all of them had in common.
What's that?
They're lazy and they don't want to work.
Oh.
Right? At least those are the ones I bounce up. And to get a job as a person who has been through the system, the prison system, is very difficult because of the attitude these young men have towards an honest day's work. To them, it's like the no-no in life. Right? That mindset has to change. And getting politicians to convince these people, and mind you, it's taxpayers' money they're taking, hardworking people who more than likely were victims of these guys, to spend on them, to get them to change their mindset and to do an honest day's work. Politicians are going to think twice about that.
All right, buddy. I got you.
And I'll tell you something. You're better off seeking funding privately than from a government official.
All right, buddy. I got you. Thanks so much for your call. Garth, would you like to respond to that? What do you think?
Yeah, listen. You know, it's a common consensus, right? That's common consensus. And it's, he's saying exactly what we just said. But what he's saying is what the problem is, right? So we just talked about that. And I think he's 100% correct. Sometimes you meet those people who come out of there. The mindset is already in there. Now, keep in mind the age that they're coming out there with.
Correct. Yeah.
They're coming out there where they've already been molded to a certain mindset. So if you come from community, you go from the community into the jail, you come out to the jail with the same or worse mindset. When you come back out into the community looking for a job, your mindset is going to be the same, but even worse than you went in with.
Yeah.
So this is why we're saying that these programs, they don't need to be, you don't need to spend more money on the program. Maybe, just maybe, maybe you start tweaking the programs that you already have that exist. But you see, this is not common knowledge to us. We don't know what the programs look like.
And that is it.
And that is part of the issue. Because if we say, hey, we don't like that program, that doesn't make sense. Because most of these kids coming out, my boy who just called would hire them. They don't want to work. They ain't sure enough for work. It's better I didn't have them here and I try to give them a chance.
Yeah.
Now, that's an experience. And his experience is not less valid than anybody else. His experience is a real experience.
Yeah.
But it also shifts right back to what we said. If they're coming out with the worst or same mindset, what after his job that they didn't want to show up for because they want the money quick, what is their now alternative? Which means that we're just kind of like throwing fish back into the pond.
Correct, right. And that is the challenge that we are having. And I'm really glad that we are having this conversation. And guys, good afternoon to you if you're now joining us. Carrie VAC, I'm in the company. Just about 10 minutes away from the top. And we are here with Garth Voser. He's a social advocate and a life coach for men and boys as we are discussing the prison overload. Now, I'm going to stick this in one time and I know we're going to continue this conversation. Okay, let's take a phone call before we head to the next point. Let's take it really quickly. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Hey, buddy, what's up? Talk to us.
I'm your guest. I know this personally. And it is time I take you on the radio station.
Wait, but yo, you're breaking up. Dude, you're breaking up.
You hear me?
Yeah, I know, you're too good, man. You hearing us?
I hear you. Very, very.
Nah, man, you're breaking up. You're breaking up. Try me back. 625-2257 or 627-3223. I'm going to get into it. I'm watching at my time.
Yeah.
I want to talk about... okay, let me just get this voice note. Let me just get this voice note quick because I want to ask you. I don't want to be interrupted. Let's get this voice note. Let's get this voice note.
Hey, Caribbean guests. Interesting program. The programs that they have existing are good enough. And, you know, there's always room for improvement where they could implement different programs and, you know, different ideas and things to rehabilitation for these escorts and these prisoners and criminals and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But the culture of these criminals and the mindset of these criminals is quick money, like Harvey explained before, quick money. And you can't get quick money by these programs. You cannot. And because of that, they would not put the effort to learn a trade or to learn a skill and to work their way from the ground up, because everyone else in normal society had to work their way from the ground up, unless, you know, you have an inheritance to get, or he's a criminal and you're just taking a pipe in somebody's waist and relieving them of the money and the items and quick money. But the mindset of these criminals and them, even if they're rehabilitated, is a laziness. And unfortunately, that's just what it is. So I'm not saying that they wouldn't have the few that would work and roll the way up, you know, but the mentality of most of them is just to be lazy. You know, and because of that laziness, they just find themselves going back into crime to make quick money, because it's just easier to stick it up and relieve your money when you get paid at the end of the month or the week than to work a whole month or a fortnight or whatever and to earn a honest salary. That's just what it is.
All right, buddy, thanks to you so much for your voice note. Anything you'd like to add to that, Garth?
Again, again, there's no lie being told. There's not. And we look at it from the perspective of, it's unfortunate that that is everybody's mindset. And you're talking about the criminal mindset coming out. We're talking about, this is the public.
Yeah.
You know, this is our mindset as people. Like, well, they don't want to work. Yeah. They're just lazy.
Nice.
They're just this, they're just that. And it's, and you're right. There's a percentage of them that they don't really see it being something that they don't want to work hard.
And later down in the interview, in the next hour, we are going to be talking about changing the mindset and breaking that cycle. So I can't wait for that. This call will have to wait. Let's get back into it. I want to talk about the ethnic disparities in the prison system, if you're okay for, you know, we're talking about that. Like, statistics show that a large percentage of inmates in TNT come from a specific ethnic background. What do you think about this? Why do you think that this is the case? From your experience and, you know, having those conversations and dealing with men.
Let's, you know, every time we look at certain things, we somehow forget to look at the root of the problem.
Yeah.
Right? And let's look at the root of the communities.
Right.
Let's look at the root of both communities. Let's see what how one side grew up and how the other side grew up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then let's see what support looks like. Let's see what family structure looks like. Let's see what, you know, you guys say inheritance looks like. Let's see what business looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So, when you think about those roots or rooted actions or those rooted characteristics, you can actually see, if you, because you know they say you can't connect the dots unless you're connected backwards,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct.
If you look at those communities and you look at that, you can see why there's a higher rate in one community versus the other.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times what the foundation looks like is what created the house.
Right. Okay.
So
okay.
If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So when we look at it now, even from part of the study that they did, the actual thing when it comes to African descent versus Indian descent was actually a higher percentage. You're looking at maybe 45% versus 16%, right?
Yeah.
And this is something that rarely ever changes, hardly ever changes, because some of the foundation stuff stays the same in certain communities.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you would find that the result is sometimes going to be the same.
Oh, right? Okay.
So again, we focus, and this is something I talked about recently, we focus about at-risk youth.
Mm-hmm.
Give me four areas that you know are at risk, and then tell me the diaspora of those four areas. Like right now, give me two areas, Carrie, that you can think about if you think about at-risk youth.
At-risk, most likely Port of Spain,
mm-hmm.
and east-ish Port of Spain, northeast Port of Spain.
So you're still in east direction. Port of Spain. So let's call out places. Let's call out places like what you see on the news a lot. We can call four. I'm not going to call any names because I don't want to make it seem as though we're focusing on that.
Yeah.
But why is it that we're not saying when first thing that comes to our mind, just like we said with women's versus men's prisons,
mm-hmm.
why are we not the first thing that comes to our mind say that at-risk youth is somewhere down in South?
Yeah.
You understand? So this is the reality of our conversation and reality of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot continue to pretend that it doesn't exist. That's one. And then maybe you look at the structure in certain areas of certain communities and see why certain communities are now actually, why certain communities are actually like, they're pumping out certain things when some are not.
Right.
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 And that's what I'm saying. So it's experience from people. And then when you look at the different demographic of people that go in there, it's all based on, I feel, because we focus so much and we magnify some of these areas that we talk about constantly, that we're conditioned to think the first thing we think about, because we're so conditioned to think that that is the area.
That is the
when
right.
some of those areas have some of the most talented, and I've met them,
correct.
Some of the most entrepreneurial mindsets that you could think about. But it comes just like when they go for a job and you say, this is where I live, they say, uh-huh, let me skip you.
And that is actually true, you know, because a quick story. I have a friend living East Port of Spain, right? He went to apply for a job. So he came to me, I was like, Gil, I could use your address. I was like, why? Because, you know, I can't use my address because I know that they would tell me no. And he was right, because I tested it. I tried it. I said, all right, I go in and apply for the job. Let me see if that's really work. So I used his address. And, you know, they called him and they didn't call me. So when I called back and I was like, well, you know, I was looking forward to a call. And I was like, well, no, the position already filled. I was like, So it made me think, and that what you said there, it made sense. It made sense. Wow. Whew. Okay. We're going to get into that.
Take a deep breath, guys.
Yeah. No, it's a lot. And I'm really glad that we are having this discussion, because a lot of us, myself and even some of the listeners, you know, we don't really understand, you know, how all this started. So,
Gary, I don't think that we don't understand. You know, I think that we don't want to pull the plaster off, and we don't want to dig deeper into what we know. Mm. We know. As people that live in Trinidad and Tobago, we know certain things. We just are afraid to maybe say it because we don't want to be judged or isolated. And this is one of the things that I've been doing with the men's projects, where I'm okay with them saying, hey, I will agree with you. That's fine, because I would love to hear a different perspective. But I would love for them to show me an example of something that says opposite of what you and I have right now.
Yeah.
And then show me somebody that could say, nothing that you're saying there, you or I, makes sense. Like, oh, nah, well, I didn't think about X when I thought about high at-risk youth.
Yeah.
I only thought about...
Yeah.
You know, like, show me.
So, let's head straight to the 4 p.m. news. And when we come back, we are going to continue our discussions. All right, God, thanks so much.
For sure.
So stay on the line for me. We'll be back.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Hey, guys, welcome back. Just about 6 minutes after 4 on Freedom 106.5 FM. Carrie V is here. I'm in the company. I'm going all the way to 6 p.m. As we are still in the discussion with Garth Vauzer. And who is Garth Vauzer? He's a social advocate and a life coach for men and boys, as we are talking about the prison overload. So help me welcome him back. Welcome back, Garth. How are you?
I'm good. Nice. Good conversation.
Thank you so much. Now, I asked you about the ethnic imbalance. No,
mm-hmm.
About the ethnic background. You mentioned about the community. Do you think that the reason for that is a community breakdown?
Yeah, I mean, we have to think about it from even the standpoint of, do we have more mentors and relationships with men in different communities than we used to have before?
Mm.
You know, when we look at, and this is why sometimes when you look at these things, it's could be general, but it could also be specific, right?
Right.
Now, the mentorship in communities, we now know that some communities, their mentorship comes from, or relationships comes from different elements. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they get brotherhood from. That's where they get value from. That's where they feel appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about that, you know, some people will be like, oh, well, you know, that's because it's easy money.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of other factors that come with that. Now, in the communities, if we talk about the two different communities, there's a long-standing idea of how, you know, this person always goes into business and then they give the business to this son and they get this.
Yeah.
So sometimes that is what makes the difference long-term, because if that's how this community is, then there's something to do. There's something that they could get back from it, because they're normally saying, okay, well, cool. Well, I'll work in the business so that I can get the business from the past generation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that something that we have in the other communities? Most times, no. Mm-hmm. We don't.
Correct.
You know, and this is why we make a general statement and we say that, you know, well, unless you have like money or something, you know, that's the other resource that you could do. Mm-hmm. But it's true. It's true. And like I said, everybody has an experience, and it's sad that we have an experience. So it's unfortunate that that's how we think generally about our population.
Yeah.
Because if you look at it, it doesn't even, there's things that are not said that are said.
Mm-hmm.
We think about prison. We think about men. We think about certain communities. We think about one community.
Yeah.
We think about at risk. We think about one area.
Correct.
So you see, this is the mindset that
You could blame us.
But this is what I'm saying, and this is never going to be the blame game of picking a side or the other. This is just what our conditioning is that's the first thing that we think. And what I've done, I've dove back into the perception from conversations with people. And when you ask the question, like I asked you, and I got a text message about another era beside the era we were thinking about.
Yeah, true.
You might have gotten a text as well, right? but if you didn't, if I didn't get that text message, I wouldn't have thought about that.
I wouldn't have either, honestly.
What we see in the news and what we see more often is these communities. So if we highlight these communities and always in a negative light, what is the first stigma that we put on those areas?
Yeah.
Negative.
Mm. Correct.
Right? So maybe let's have more stories of something positive out of these areas.
Yeah.
And maybe let's see something where the community gets together instead of where the community is destroying each other.
Mm-hmm.
So the same way that we've conditioned people to think, oh, this is all that comes from there, let's condition them to think, well, hear what? There might be a couple people in there that may not want to live that type of life and want to come out.
Yeah, correct.
So it's conditioning, but I think what we do, we have an imbalance in the way that we condition our country,
mm-hmm.
because most of the things that you see more of the negatives than the positives, and there's not a equal or a close enough to equal, because nothing will ever be equal.
Yeah.
But we're not seeing as much or as many positives come out of these communities, and they're not highlighted as much.
Mm-hmm.
And once they're not highlighted, we think sometimes we come to the point where they feel like they don't exist. Yeah,
because I would think it's more like a cultural thing. And in order for that to change, that mindset or what we see or what is being told to us and what we are getting used to,
program.
That has to start from not only our generation, but our mm-hmm. children's and then our children's children. So we, as in this generation, we have to make that stand and say, hey, listen, let us try to get to our children so that they would start to grow up with that mentality, so that they would train their children, and that's how, you know, the mindset would change. Because we
remember we talked about that. We talked about being consistent. We mm-hmm. talked about being committed to change.
And patient.
And that's mm-hmm. what we don't have.
Yeah.
We're a 2-second commitment. We're on the bandwagon. Now, again, if we say, we understand that you have to be proactive with some stuff and you have to be reactive with some stuff.
Mm.
There's some stuff that we can't change. The guys who came on here and they said, hey, listen, I try to hire some people, give them something, they come true, and guess what?
It already happened. We can't change it.
They don't want to work.
Yeah.
Guess what? That is their experience. I cannot fault them for their experience. That's their experience, and I value the experience. However, if we continue to think that that is the only experience, then are we saying, let's just not do anything?
Mm.
Are we saying, let us let crime increase at a rapid rate because we already know what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And then what type of country do you want to live in if that's the mindset. Of the people?
Right, correct.
You know, so this is why I say we have an opportunity to go into the schools. Because the school is where everybody comes. It don't matter where you live in. You go into one school because you're passing that school or the zone or wherever, however that works.
Mm-hmm.
That's the school that you're in. So you get your friends from that school. They could come from wherever. If it starts there and we start to implement stuff there, that's us being reactive.
Yeah, I understand.
Right? Not reactive, proactive.
Proactive,
but
proactive.
If we start where we say, okay, cool, when they come out of the jail, we are going to rehabilitate them or at least get them some type of rehabilitation. We're also giving them an opportunity. And some people come out, and the first thing I say when I talk to them, this first thing they tell me is, dude, nobody don't care about me. Nobody don't care about us.
True.
They don't care. And I'm
that.
Like, well, why you would say nobody don't care? But I hear with you, but I care, but you're the only one, and I guarantee just now you'll stop. Because when people commit to it, the support is also another thing that we don't get from the communities. We don't get from the corporation. And the guy said, the government shouldn't, they say, let's not just go to the government. Let's try and get the corporations to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. However, I can tell you from experiences with other people and just experience, that is another difficult task because you're looking at where the companies already have their initiatives that they do for the company, for the country. And sometimes, when we look at where most of our kids start, they don't start in the corporation. They start in school.
Schools, correct. And they start from in the community right next door. Now,
we
have a few calls. Let me just take one because the lines have been ringing since before the news. So let's get this one. Let's just hear what they have to say. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Terry.
Hey, buddy, talk to us.
Good afternoon, Mr. Dad Walker, is your name?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, according to me, encourage you to persevere. It needs a lot of more people like you. You will be discouraged. Whenever you're getting substance, I want to suggest you do a fundamental analysis of whether the person wants you to succeed or not. And that will guide you how to address your contribution. Because a lot of people out here don't want you to succeed for obvious and not so obvious reasons. So you look at what is their intention. If they want to take it, like people who you meet doesn't want to work and all kinds of things. Like if you meet everybody who to make kind, you have a analysis of what the intention and things. You continue trying to encourage you, talk piles, and put it to you like that is a unsolvable problem, and that is the order of the day, and wasting your time and whatever. So brother, there's a job that few people would want to do, and I want to encourage you that forget them, you will meet them.
All right, buddy, I got you. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for... He just got cut off. I don't know what's going on there. But let me take one more before we head to our next question. Hello, good afternoon.
Yes. Good afternoon.
Hey, what's happening? Talk to us.
Yes, a very important program, and it's a conversation I think we must have.
Frequently.
As a nation. We can't shun and be naive about it.
Mm-hmm.
And while I agree with your guest in theory and so on, I feel
lower your volume on your radio for me now, please.
Radio is off.
Yeah, I'm getting some feedback here, man. My ears in. By the time I finish here, I ain't have no ears. All right, go ahead.
Yeah,
let me.
What I'm saying is that people have to make choices, because if you listen to former government minister Mr. Foster come in, there was a plethora of programs, every ministry all over this place, all kind of programs that he boasted about. And he had all those programs. They had a...
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we had a shortage of programs.
Right.
You had YTEP and some of these programs, people get stipend to a...
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, so I am saying, look at, you have over 100,000 Venezuelans came to Trinidad with nothing. And they live in, they function in, they paying rent, they work in, they sending back money home. Mm-hmm. I think they do it. I am saying, yes, I agree there is the problem of if you want to say, at-risk communities and everything else and children and so on. But I think it is exaggerated, and a lot of people use that as an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
More people than really should be, if you want to say, in that category. It is used as an excuse, and people make choices, say, for the fast life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where the problem is, if people don't make up their mind from young to work and
change the mindset, more or less changing the mindset. Yeah,
go and take a little loan in a credit union and on whatever, and have what you call gradual or mental, social, and economic mobility. And you live like that. But if you want to get up tomorrow morning and say, I want a car today, or I want this today, and I want this next week by whatever, and you can't get it by normal working or whatever. Like,
mm.
Long time when you want to buy a pair of shoes.
Wrap it up for me.
You have to work and sacrifice, and you have to be willing to work your way up and don't take shortcuts.
All right, buddy. I got you. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for your call. So, what we were talking about, Garth, I want to get into changing the mindset. And actually breaking that cycle. In your experience working with the young men, what are the common mindsets or beliefs that lead them down the path to prison? How, based on your experience, so what can you tell us about that?
You know, we've talked to the idea of the young men, and we've talked about it from a country, we talked about it from the community, mm-hmm. and we have to talk about it from homes, right? And inside of the homes, you also have to think about, there are lots of people inside of the homes that are not dealing, and this is going to be a little bit more on the mental side of it, since we talk about mindset.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There are lots of kids that are coming out to some of these homes with trauma that we have not been able to even tackle or adjust or have a conversation about.
Yeah.
So that you find that a lot of time they come out coping, right? They're coping to whatever happens. So if you look at our mindset shift, we look at, okay, how could we make a mindset shift if we don't even know what the mindset is like unless they commit a crime?
Yeah.
Right? So, okay, that's not being reactive. So while we have people might go in and teach, like you said earlier, which was really funny because I've talked about it,
mm-hmm.
we might want to teach them drafting and carpentry,
yeah.
right? And how to be a shoemaker, I guess. Let's go all the way back.
Mm-hmm.
However, mm-hmm. what I'm saying is that where are our mental advocates as well to play a part in to figure out, hey, what's really going on here? Because the mindset is what leads to the actions, right?
Yeah.
So we have them in the homes from school. Like, I don't even know if we have guidance counselors in school anymore. I think we have a dean that you have to make appointment with. I'm not sure.
I think there's like one guidance counselor for like about three or four. Yeah, that is unacceptable.
Okay. So tell me how that helps our society when we look at dealing with the mindset of the young people.
Mm.
So again, I keep saying, inside of the problem is the solution. then we need more people to address this before it gets to that point. And then when if it does get to the point, as obviously it will, there's no place in this world that has zero crime.
Yeah.
Right? Unless it has zero people. So if we're looking at being reactive, let's find people in there to help rehabilitation that not only comes into let's just get your job, because it comes like financial literacy. Mm. I give you $1 million and you don't know how to spend $1 million. You'll have zero by tomorrow. Go right back into the store.
Right.
So we need to have it on both sides, but we also need to boost that part of it in the schools, and not just from a mental aspect, like a therapist. There was a study we've done recently, and I think last year posted something as well, talking about the fact that now our teachers and principals are mainly women versus men. And this study, if you think about how what that leads to as well, there was, you know, a long time your parents used to say, if you go by your father, there's a fear. Like, there's a fear. Fear of God in you. Okay. If you had a male teacher in school as a young boy, there will be some resistance because there's that authoritative type of mentality. But if now you're looking at where even teachers and principals are majority women versus men, there's not that authority in there to even have that kind of conversation with, or somebody who can relate to them from a male perspective. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, with all the hormones flooding through these young men at 14, 15, 16, 17 in school, and my teachers are female, you could just add it up right there for me.
And I think that's what's actually happening because it's happening.
It's happening more now because you have the majority of teachers are females. And again, this has been posted as a study. There are more women as teachers and principals versus men. So how about we get more men involved in becoming teachers again?
Mm-hmm. True.
That will start back your stage of mentorship, which could get into the mindset of the young people, because now the man might feel better to go talk to Mr. Smith, because Mr. Smith can understand.
When I was going to school, we had more male teachers than female teachers, you know. We had them. And
It has changed drastically. You go online, you could check it. It says that the shift has come where there are more women in as teachers and principals than there was years ago.
Mm.
Right? When I went to school, it was the same thing. We had female teachers, but we also had male teachers. And you know, if you walk around the hall, to get back into class,
you're going to play that now. We don't have that anymore.
So once we don't have that anymore, now we're taking away these little important aspects of the mindset shift. Like I said, it doesn't have to be a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
But which boy will normally say, Mom, I need to go talk to a therapist? He most likely will talk to the guy in the community or the teacher and say, sir, this is what I deal with, man. And sir will say, okay, cool, because I can understand. I was a boy once.
Yeah.
There's nothing to relate to. There's no mentorship. There's no relationships. So, yes, we would love to have therapy for everybody. But sometimes the therapy comes in the form of conversation.
Mm.
And if they're not having the conversation, then they're not dealing with the issue.
Correct. But how can men in communities, how can they become mentors? You know, for the men who are listening right now who would love to help and really be there for the youths out there, how can they start to be a mentor? What advice do you have for them?
I know that I run something called the Dear Men Project, but I am not on the side of the men or the women in a whole. The reason why I say this is because the men are supposed to really take some time to take a step back and see that there's a need for us to be more mentors in our communities, right? Growing up, for me, it was fitness. There was this guy, I always said this, my dad played football, but the guy down the street used to lift weights.
Mm.
And I knew him because we used to play cricket together. And I was like, yo, so I would ask him for advice on that. But that was a male in the community that I could go to beside my father, right? And I think as men, we have been designed or conditioned to think so much just about business and body and status that we lose focus on the fact that mentorship is also part of what we used to do.
Yeah.
And once we skip that part, and you know, we talk about making some money and having a bunch of women and all that kind of stuff, which, I mean, again, whatever, culturally suits you, it suits you.
Mm-hmm.
However, we also have to play a part and say, okay, what community are we in that we may need to maybe volunteer some of our time or create something that the boys could be a part of? Because right now in society, in Trinidad Tobago, the boys, and I'll say it, they're getting left behind.
Right.
They're getting left behind so much that now they just have to figure it out. And when they figure it out, we're telling them that what you figure it out is wrong.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, give me another option.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Now, if you have one program or something that you can introduce nationwide, one program, if you could do that tomorrow to help young men out of prison and even men in young men in communities, what would that look like? One program that you could just snap your fingers and tomorrow, bam, it's outside.
Well, you know what, Carrie, I want to do, instead of snapping my fingers, to create a program.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to sit down with the people that make decisions and bounce ideas.
Mm.
Because what you find is that I could tell you this program works in this community when it may not. So unless we sit down in a table with the with people that made the decisions and that have the funding and that have the support for these things to happen, we can have the best programs ever. And I'll just be snapping my finger until my fingers are to hurt. You understand? Because again, we've tried different things. We've tried different projects. We've tried different things. There is the Empower Teaching program that runs right now, and I'm grateful that they kept it on. However, there's more that can be done to even those programs.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a matter of, instead of us saying, let us just snap our fingers and get a program that works, how about we snap our fingers and we get a meeting with the decision makers and we say, okay, let's take some time. Let's sit down and create something that we think may work. Let's implement it and let's commit to the program, because you want to change centuries
of
conditioning in 6 months.
Right.
The program might be out there for 6 months, but then 6 months after, it's gone. So by snapping my fingers, I'll have to snap for the next 6 months.
And we mightn't have all that snap. We're not honest. We mightn't have all that. So, but it's actually getting to the decision makers, because
to listen to our conversation beside the ones that they have been since 1904. We have to have people that come in there and say, hey, listen, this is an idea from my experience. This is an idea from my perspective. Hey, I saw this happen. Okay, I'll give you a good example before we're wrapping up just now.
Yeah.
The Baltimore, in the U.S., the Baltimore area, the mayor actually brought crime down in his area.
Mm-hmm.
And Baltimore, if anybody knows about Baltimore, it is a high crime area, or it was a high crime area. And when you look at how he implemented certain things to bring crime down, and again, we're not saying you're going to eliminate that. Mm. It does not happen.
But you could reduce it.
But you could reduce it. And he actually helped the crime numbers go down by implementing and investing into youth programs. So if we like to follow everything else and follow dress code and
why
music,
we don't follow that, why
not follow something on a smaller scale?
Yeah.
Right? And see, okay, but again, these are all conversations you have to sit down with decision makers and sit down and have. But you can't get onto them. They're not willing to listen, some of them. And then when you sit down in there,
but
and
they have to make the decision
to say, we're going to support and commit to this program or at least these ideas and see if something works. Or else we'd be like the guy who called and said, hey, I try to hire some people, them lazy. So
and
guess what?
It.
The next person that comes out of jail and asks for a job, forget it.
And I'm glad you brought that back up, because that was one of my questions. And I say, you know what, let me ask it, because I know we have a diaspora of persons listening. How can an ex-prisoner reintegrate himself into society without facing the stigma that often pushes them back into crime? What is a tip do you have for them? What can you say?
I'm going to be very transparent with you. I have no tips for that. The reason I say I have no tips for that is because it is difficult for them to do on their own. They're already going to face stigma of coming out of there. There was a man years ago, I can't remember his name offhand, but he used to have a program on the television where he would go and try to help them to rehabilitate. I can't remember if he's still around. But that was a program that gave people an opportunity, right? At the end of the day, we can look at it and say the guy that came out of prison, but we haven't touched on certain things yet, like the guy that was in prison that wasn't found guilty 10 years after. So without him even doing anything, he's still coming out there at the same disadvantage as the person who was in there for something that they did.
Yeah.
So that's another conversation. But what I say in terms of a tip, I can't really say, here's the tip to do. I can't say that to anybody. What I could say is that, what are we offering them when they come out for the ones that do want to make a difference? Because if we say everybody's the same thing, then we don't offer anybody anything, which means that we're not going to change anybody.
Anything at all. I gotcha. All right. And as we close, because it's just about 4:30 and I'm having a good time. I love this conversation, because these are the conversations that we don't usually have. I know on Tuesdays I have Miss Dawn Pettigrew-Smith. We deal with men. So she's a psychologist, a men's psychologist. And we talk about, you know, different chats. I enjoy that program a lot, because we don't hear enough about men. And I think it's time for us to really hear, man. That's my opinion. Now, before we go, what's your message to young men who believe that the streets are their only option?
My message to them would be that we're sorry. We're sorry that is what you think in terms of that's the only option, and that we are constantly trying and making the effort to create other options for you. It's going to take some time, and sometimes it's all relies on the decision that you make.
Yeah.
Because we could say what we want, but I think one of the things that we don't say to our men enough is that we're sorry for when we mess up or when we haven't done enough.
Mm. Correct.
So my only thing would be to be sorry, and there are people trying. There are different things they're trying, and maybe we'll try to maybe put up more resources online so they could see it when they go through social media. Maybe the media could do a better job of maybe highlighting something that's positive in certain communities. You know, so I think my only message right now, as we continue to work and try to get the decision makers to make decisions, is that we're sorry.
Hmm.
You know, unfortunately, I know you might feel like this is your only choice, but there are other choices. However, we have to do a better job of creating resources for our young men.
Hmm. And I actually feel that. So thank you so much. But before we go, Garth, tell us how persons can reach out to you. You know, if a man is listening, a boy, men, the dudes, if y'all are listening and they want to reach out to you, how can they look you up? What's your social media handles?
They can find me at I Am God Voza. And you said the name correctly, so thank you very much. Normally I hear Voison or Poison and all kind of weird stuff. So I Am God Voza on Instagram. Also, they can find us at DMN Project. So at DMN Project on Instagram as well. It's just a matter of raising awareness. So sometimes I might be able to reach back out or not. Sometimes I might post a couple of resources in terms of people who have issues mentally and they want to reach out to somebody. I might put the numbers up.
Mm-hmm.
But for those two for now, I'll also say check the community centers or community areas that you are at. There are resources out there.
Hmm.
And we're just not doing a good job of putting it out there.
Correct. And I understand what you're saying, because I have the same issues, because sometimes I would hear persons talking about things and I'd be like, really? I'd never heard about that. And then
you didn't even know about the DMN project.
Exactly. Right? Right. But now I know.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to thank you so much for joining us today. It was an amazing conversation. And I really appreciate that we have you back again so that we could talk some more to bring awareness. Thanks so much for joining us today.
All right. Have a good one.
Yes,
thank you.
Thanks so much. So, guys, that was Garth Voza. He is a social advocate and a life coach for men and boys. As we were talking about the prison overload, and it was an amazing interview, amazing discussions, and it was an eye-opener for me.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.